When you think of the author Edgar Allan Poe, bizarre things come to mind. Murderers, insanity, a foreboding raven at the door. It's easy to conflate Poe's poems and short stories, though, with Poe himself. Now there's a public television series in the works, fusing the great writer's biography with his most peculiar tales. Edgar Allan Poe's Mystery Theater premieres Monday night at 6 on our companion TV station, PBA 30. Lois Reitzes spoke with the homegrown creatives behind the series, writer-director Jose Acosta and actors Paul McLean and Keith Brooks. Paul McLean plays the enigmatic author, and Keith Brooks is Poe's friend turned jealous rival, Rufus W. Griswold. We'll first hear from writer-director Jose Acosta, who explains the show's approach to Poe's character.
Well, we wanted to show that Poe was a human being, that he had tenderness and the ability to empathize with other people, and he worked very hard. Things didn't come easily to him, so he had to work very hard to become such an accomplished poet and writer. So, you know, we focused on his biography and on his relationships with his family and with his literary rivals. He had many friends in the literary world, and he turned many of them into rivals as he criticized their work or tried to outdo his peers as, you know, as an artist.
Paul, you played the author. How did you prepare to take on the role of Edgar Allan Poe?
The first thing I did is going back to look at Poe's works and actually reread the materials, look for patterns and find things that sort of are indicative of the character. Because if you find patterns in the works, then obviously that must have been part of the character's personality, or at least that's something to grab hold of. But in going back to them, I found that I have had a stronger relationship with Poe's works throughout my life. My mother, an English teacher, read to me as a child. She read the Poe stories. She read Mask of the Red Death. In my high school graduation, I did a portion of Telltale Heart, and I had completely forgotten about these things. I just sort of generally appreciated them in high school. And I thought, too, about what drew me to those pieces as a younger student. And I love the escape. The ability to get lost in something that is not real and be comfortable with it. And I think no matter how horrible the story is, the fact that it's escape is what draws us. And that's what I was looking for. How does Poe escape from his own life by going into these stories?
Jose, would you give us a synopsis of the plot?
Well, we combine Poe's biography with his works themselves. So we tried to come up with a device, a literary device that would allow us to do that, and we realized, well, what if Poe opened a theater and adapted his own fiction to the stage? And suddenly everything started clicking because Poe, in real life, was the son of an actress, a very well-known and successful actress, Eliza Poe, from England, that died when he was only 3 years old. And so his desire to, you know, for that relationship with a mother also becomes his desire to go back to the stage and to have the actor's life. And so what he does is he asks his family members and his literary rivals to depict characters on the stage, and hopefully the audience will start thinking about what the relationship is between an author's life and their fiction.
How important is it for a viewer to know the stories you reference?
Well, we made it so that's kind of working on two levels. If you're a real Poe fanatic, you're going to pick up on a lot of kind of inside jokes.
Well, I guess if we were to update Freud's concept to contemporary buzzwords, Poe had mommy issues, right?
Yeah.
How are those things revealed in this program?
Well, I think particularly with this program, his desire to open the theater is definitely an homage to his mother. At this point in Poe's life, things are not going well. He has some notoriety, but he's wanting to build on that. And I think the idea of Poe wanting to open that theater and get back to something that's comfortable is what he's attempting to do. And then constantly throughout the rest of the episode, he is checking in with himself to see, is this working? Have I done her some sort of service? And there's lots of ambiguous references to mother or art or beauty. And I think you can find that in Poe's work as well.
I think it's also this constant pursuit of a female comfort, right? With the character of Virginia, who is Edgar Allan Poe's wife, it still seems like he's trying to... There's a very stark similarity between her and Poe's mother that we see in the program, and I think that's very intentional, that he's trying to seek the things he misses from his mother in his wife at times, which is Freudian in of itself as well. So I'll stop talking about that.
No. Yeah. Keith, who was Rufus Griswold?
Rufus Griswold, the Reverend, was Poe's ally at times, but also perhaps his greatest adversary. He was his frenemy, I think is the common word, right? So he's this guy that was a rival of Poe in a literary sense, considered himself a friend of Poe's, but also envied everything that Poe had. Poe had not only the talent that Griswold wanted, he had not only the life that Griswold wanted, but he also had the trajectory of a career that Griswold wanted. And I also feel an interesting thing that Griswold, though envious of Poe, wanted Poe to be this great success. And some would argue from a historical standpoint, Griswold is part of the reason Poe became such a mysterious, iconic figure in history. Griswold in life would later tarnish Poe's reputation and say all this stuff about him, you know, crying out in the night before he died and all these crazy hallucinations and stuff like that, which I think maybe in, you know, popular culture cemented Poe even further than his, you know, adding to his works.
Yes, and just to give you the backstory on that, so Griswold wrote Poe's obituary in Baltimore, and really it was a very strange obituary because you would expect a friend to say nice things about the deceased, but in fact, he accused him of abusing drugs, alcohol, womanizing, things that you don't say after, you know, shortly after a person's death. And like Keith indicated, this actually created this mythology about Poe, and he became more notorious as a result. Whether that was intentional on Griswold's part or not, we don't really know.
Yeah. Keith, you mentioned that he envied his talent and knew it was something he could never achieve.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a very, to me as an actor, it's an interesting role to step into because that envy is such a strong driving part. And I think envy in of itself is a conflicting emotion that sort of tears us apart, that we want to get closer to something we envy, but we also want to surpass it. And to have that friendship between Griswold and Poe, I feel is almost a classic Shakespearean thing. It's reminiscent of Iago and Othello or Lex Luthor and Superman, to use a more classic comparison, perhaps. But
Mozart and Salieri.
Yeah, 100%. Going back to Brutus and Caesar, it is that person that stabs you in the back who's the closest to you. And to see that interpersonal relationship, you start to begin to see it in this episode, in this first installment. And it's fun to play with. I think it really introduces a level of treachery and another aspect of mystery to Edgar's life.
Indeed. Watching the program, some of it seems much lighter than one would expect from a story about someone who wrote such dark stories and, you know, emotionally charged poetry. Were you trying to tell the audience the man is separate from his work?
Yes, very much so. What I think that readers sometimes forget, because they're so absorbed into these stories about the first-person psychotic narrator, and Poe really developed that whole genre, the story of the psychotic killer who's intimating with us his every thought. So then people associate Poe with that, and they think, oh, that's who Poe was. But what I'm saying is, Poe is not a guy who killed people and hid them under the floorboards. Poe is a guy who invented that idea as a literary device. Isn't he a clever man? And in fact, he had a very unique sense of humor. And many authors of his time and later were influenced by him and took on that dark humor that he spearheaded in the 1840s.
Here in the U.S., Poe is regarded as a mystery writer. The French have celebrated Poe as a literary master for a long time. Do you think Poe is undervalued?
I don't know that I'd say undervalued, but definitely as time goes by, people look at different aspects of Poe. In doing some of the research for the role, we were looking at biographies that were written in the 1920s, 1930s, and they are acknowledging the darker stories, but then they would champion and say, or one statement that stood out was, Poe is best known for his play, The Gold Bug, which is, of course, not a play as he writes it, but it was the story of him finding treasure, basically creating the first pirate story. And while I knew Goldbug, that's not the first thing that would come to mind, and certainly not the first thing that come to mind of students in high schools around. But for a very, very long time, because there was a play going up and down the Eastern Seaboard, that's what Poe was. Poe was this guy who told great adventure stories. Mm-hmm. And also there were these ancillary stories that were terrible and these great poems. So I think depending on the time period and the group of people who are reading his work, they gravitate towards whatever they find most appealing or best reflects themselves. And since his body of work is so wide, it varies a great deal depending on who you ask.
And if I can interject here too, I mean, I think for my age range and Paul's as well, probably everyone's here because everyone here looks ripe age of 20 at least. That's, you know, that Edgar Allan Poe has been put on a pedestal as this solemn, dark figure of infinite sadness and horrific truths and what
tortured
and torture
emotionally tortured artist.
100%. But I think this goes as a testament as well to Paul. And don't get me wrong, I despise everything about this gentleman sitting to my right. But his performance is sort of incredible because I think when actors are instilled with portraying someone of as epic proportions as Poe is, we sort of get afraid. We fall under the weight of that. They have to be profound. When you play Hamlet, you want your Hamlet to be memorable. But we forget that vulnerability is profundity in itself, that seeing Paul's portrayal of Edgar as a human, as having moments of doubt, really emphasized the brilliance that this man could have. He portrays him as a genius, but like a genius that's coming into his own. And I think that makes it entertaining and interesting for the audience.
I think that's true of going back and looking at the literature, too. If you hear a lot of readings of The Raven, for example, it's very, very weighty and stately, and they're beautiful readings. But going back at it recently, it's a lot of individual discovery and a lot of lightheartedness and self-doubt and things that you would happen across any time. It's not this great moment. It's a funny story.
Yeah, I feel weak and weary a whole lot of the time.
No, okay. Yes, he's setting up, and he does do that. He's setting up that this was this dark, ponderous thing as he sits in his library looking at books. But then he makes jokes about it in the very next stanza. He says it was stupid of me to look into these books. He vainly was seeking to borrow. And then going on a little bit later, he's laughing at himself about how stupid he felt being worried by the noise, and he acknowledges the beating of his heart over something stupid like the door knocking. And then when the raven comes in, he doesn't immediately fear this beast. In fact, he laughs at it. He says, this ungainly fowl causes me to smile. And he says it multiple times throughout. He's actually, for the bulk of the raven, he's in a pretty good mood until he realizes nothing can distract him from the fact that tomorrow she's still dead.
I would be in a good mood if birds were talking to me, too. I mean, think of it like a Disney princess. But I think you're absolutely right that over the years, the nuance that actually occurs in the literature and the stories has been overshadowed by the Vincent Priceification of what the work actually has. I mean, Edgar Allan Poe, at his heart, is a romantic above all else. He always talks about forlorn love and lost love. And that seems to be a very thematic thing, not only through our show, but also, you know, his work and life.
And as usual, these guys have, you know, our actors Keith and Paul have depicted all the emotion surrounding this, and I'm just going to add some, you know, footnotes. But Baudelaire was a famous French poet, and he managed to get a hold of some Poe stories and poems, and he was blown away. He was a contemporary of Poe's, and he translated everything he could find by Edgar Allan Poe to French and popularized it in France. And so Poe was famous in Europe before any other American authors were famous in Europe. And this was an amazing accomplishment that he made because he appealed universally to so many people. And not only that, but in France he came to be known as an incredible philosopher.
How so?
Poe as a philosopher, well, he invented the detective story. And the detective story is really questioning our whole perception of reality. Are the mysterious things that are happening out there, are they supernatural, or can we explain them with reason? Can we explain them away? And this led to, of course, characters like Sherlock Holmes shortly after Poe. And so the French view him as a philosopher who's talking about a shift in the way that people think about reality.
Well, also the advent of the short story, which is accredited to Poe, the idea of being able to read an entire piece from beginning to end in one sitting, that not only changes the philosophy of the way that we look at media, but also the world, when the idea of literacy, the idea of new thoughts can be introduced to us in leisure and even shorter amounts of time. That's an earth-shattering concept, you know?
And to me, that makes him seem a little more like a musician, because he's not necessarily writing with music or strings, but if you read his plays out loud, much as he must have thought about them being read out loud, because with his mother being the actress and just the pure musicality, the language, it comes across like a song that you would sit through in short starts.
Edgar Allan Poe's Mystery Theater is the title of this program, but it suggests that there can be more installments. What are your hopes?
Well, we're so excited to have a national broadcast and be exposed to a large audience. And we really have planned 12 more episodes for this season, and we hope that that can happen next year. We're just looking for a sponsor to help us make that a reality. But we have 12 more episodes sketched out, and we can do this for at least 3 years, seasons of 13 episodes each.
And will those stories be presented as a play within the Playhouse?
Our literary device, yes. Poe's Mystery Theater will stay open, at least through the entire first season. We'll see if it becomes more metaphorical later. There's a possibility that it, who knows, may even burn to the ground, but the concept goes on. And we're going to, you know, producers asked me early on, well, how are you going to sustain a story about one author for so many episodes? And that's the thing about Poe, is that until you study him, you may not realize, but he had over 75 excellent short stories and hundreds of poems and so many interesting anecdotes in his life and so many relationships.
And I think, like, if I may, I think the element of the show that appeals is the same thing that appeals about Poe in himself. I think to this day, people are still interested in those macabre aspects of his story. They're still interested in the things that go on inside of the mind and the workings and the depletion into insanity. And I think more than ever, people are also interested in the humanizing of these iconic figures. And to see this show, it's a blend of Downton Abbey and American Horror Story, where you have all these different opportunities to tell stories in a very creative capacity, using media in different ways than you're used to.
Jose Acosta, Paul McLean, Poe himself, and the sinister or brotherly Griswold, Keith Brooks, it's really been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Lois. It's been a pleasure.